Happy New Year. Welcome to 2022. Feeling good. Dennis, I see that big smile on your face.
Yeah, no, you instantly dated us, and I don't know when this is going to drop. So.
I think I always do that. I'm like, happy St. Patrick's Day. Daylight savings time.
Please.
Well, you know what? Listeners, whatever month it is right now, I still hope that you have a happy 2022. I mean, I hope we get this episode out before 2023. So it is still relevant. Listeners, we're back for season two. We are so excited that you're back with us for The Pursuit of Perfectness, the podcast where two self-proclaimed perfectionists who are a little too hard on themselves explore this journey of why we're like this, why we strive for perfection, what's behind it, what's underneath it. And we talk to guests who have really amazing things to say about their experience as well with perfectionism. And so excited to continue this journey. Dennis, how about you?
I am also excited. Did you introduce yourself? Alan Matthews, my co-host. I'm Dennis Pacheco. We're just two average Joes. Which I think was my favorite way you described us ever. And we've got a great guest today. He is cooling his heels in the old green room there, just taking in the air conditioning. He's got it blasting. He's got a cool 44 degrees in there.
Really blasting.
Runs
and it's
cold.
It's quite cold out today in New York. It was 17 degrees out today. So not sure what the AC is about, but to each their own.
Look, everybody's got their different comfort levels.
Dennis, I don't want to even delay a second more.
Okay.
Let's bring in our guest so we can get this chat going.
Our guest today is the lovely, beautiful.
By the way, when Dennis needs more time, he just adds adjectives about the person's beauty, which is awesome.
Our guest, and it happens to be true, our guest is an improviser, storyteller, and writer from Brooklyn, and it's easy on the eyes, ladies and gentlemen, Rob Fenty. Welcome, Rob.
Hey.
Welcome, Rob.
Hey, you two. How's it going?
Great.
Cool,
so
yeah.
So great.
That is that's a great air conditioning unit you have in the green room. I really like it. You can take it down. Like, you can seriously, it just blasts, and it's awesome. But
limit.
The robe and the slippers that you guys gave me were so warm that it didn't even matter
it
was.
Take those with you.
Thank you so much.
You.
Oh my goodness. Those are
gifts
high quality.
From the show.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, Rob, we've known each other. We've all known each other for years.
Indeed.
And we reached out to you because I just had a feeling, had an inkling that you that you would describe yourself as a perfectionist. We don't really talk about exactly like what that means, I guess, on the show too much. I guess to me it means, because you wrote a blog post about this and it got me thinking, it does mean striving for perfection for me personally, but it also means if I can't do something perfectly, I'm not going to do it at all, which is
absolutely.
And it's something you touched on too. So can you talk a little bit about that, about your experience with perfectionism?
Yeah, I think it's just, as I described it and like when I wrote it, like I think it's just sort of like minimizing risk of criticism and failure and sort of social blunders and feeling stupid if you do something wrong. And also it's like a way to control things, I'd say. Like it's a way to just sort of reduce uncertainty, I think. And when you first asked me about this, Dennis, about doing this podcast, I just realized that it touches on so many different parts of my life, like from childhood, you know, to work, to health concerns, to pretty much everything. So yeah.
Yeah. And for folks listening, you can read Rob's article. It's titled On Perfectionism. It's not about perfection. It's about minimizing risk. And that's on, actually, it's robpenty.org.com. Rob, this article, I read it twice.
Thank you.
Because I'm a perfectionist. Sorry. That's a joke. If you read the article, you'll know I'm being arrogant, like your college friend who did all the chemistry homework.
With the 2.7 GPA. That was very
such classic. A shitty thing to say, but yeah.
No, but you know what? That kind of makes sense, though. Like, because if you're not doing well, you're like, oh, my God, I better she probably should do the extra problem.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? No, but I read it twice because it was full of so many things that I related to. And there was one part that I literally stopped in my tracks because it felt so true to my own experience. And it was the part where you talk about illness or ailments. And you say, let me find the.
Because you describe yourself as a bit of a hypochondriac, right?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Older, perfectionism is intertwined with my hypochondria. Any injury or ailment can feel like a moral failing. Why didn't I take some precaution to prevent this? What the hell is wrong with me? I relate that to that so much, and I don't know what it is that makes me feel like that is a moral failing. Huh. People get sick, people get injured. Like, that's the thing that happens when I hear of someone else getting sick or injured. I'm like, oh, that's terrible. What a terrible random thing that happened to them. And then I don't blame them at all. But when it's me, I somehow find a way to hold myself responsible. And the fact that you do it too makes me feel less alone.
Yeah. I mean, that's an insight that I sort of came to in therapy, that I would be angry at myself if I felt like an injury or something like that. And my therapist just said, it's not your fault. Not like a Goodwill Hunting Robin Williams scene or anything like that. Why are you blaming yourself for, something that happened? So in terms of getting the flu or something, or, I'll talk about COVID in a second, my running injuries or something, I had my hip felt a little weird, and recently my feet hurt when I run too far and things like that. And first of all, my mind goes to the worst place in the world. What if I can't ever run again? Or what if I'm permanently disfigured or something like that? Why didn't I, stretch better or alter my gait? Or there must be something out there that people know about that would have prevented this, And I think there's a meme going around about COVID, if you get it, it's not a moral failing. I've seen that. And the people I know who've gotten it recently don't know where they got it or how they got it. And they did all the right things, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But when I remember the first time it happened, I had just seen a person who was a little older, and she has, leukemia. And I was really worried that what if I was asymptomatic and I could have passed it on to her, and what kind of person would do that and things like that. So, that's sort of the way in which I sort of drill down to what did I touch that day? How many people did I walk past? What was I breathing? Wow. I don't know. Did I use enough hand sanitizer? What, all that stuff. So,
I got COVID, cause of Omicron, it's very catchy. I got it I tested positive on New Year's Day.
Oh, so, shit. I didn't know that. Wow.
So 11 days ago. But when I tell people, I always say this isn't like a shameful secret. It's not a dirty secret when I say it, but as soon as I say it, I always feel ashamed. I feel like even just now saying it is like, oh, okay. It's
like, I guess someone doesn't know how to take care of himself. I don't know. So like,
it's the new.
I hope you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed that orgy, Dennis. Because the rest of us, didn't. It
was too many guys.
No, it's very true, and it's funny because Dennis, when you told me that you got COVID, my first reaction was like, "Oh, that sucks! Like that's something bad that happened to you. Like you didn't do it." It was something that happened to you. And I totally didn't hold any judgment towards you. But if I had gotten, I think I'm more afraid of the shame than actually getting COVID because I'm vaccinated, I'm boosted. If I get it, I'll probably have a mild case, but I will not shut up in my head about how much I have failed. And I think I'm more worried about that, to be completely honest.
And I can't help myself, but I have to defend myself, even though we just said we don't have to. I am vaccinated. I am boosted. I even got the flu shot. And I'm very careful. I wear a mask. I did everything right. Sorry. I just had to jump in there for no reason.
My worry about it isn't the shame at all. Like, I don't think I would be ashamed, but I would just be like, where did it happen? I want answers. I want names. Like, you know what I mean? Cause it is so contagious. And the people I know who've gotten it, I don't know anybody. No one I know lately is not a breakthrough case. You know what I mean? There's nobody that I know who's said like, oh, I got it recently. Who isn't, vaccinated, boosted. And me too. I got the flu shot as well. But we all sort of were, I was going to bars and stuff, and it seemed like as long as you're showing your vax card, it seemed like an okay thing. Right. And maybe that's what led to it. But people who've been getting it, where from? Was it from a random stranger that you passed on the street? Or was it from who even knows, And that's the thing where is that do perfectionism and OCD have
I would think so.
An overlap.
So, because I've thought about this a lot since we started this podcast, and I definitely have had sort of OCD-ish tendencies throughout my life. Weird behavioral tics that I don't even want to get into it, but I feel like that's all tied together, and it's somehow it's about if I'm getting ready to leave class, I'm in the fourth grade. If I rub, clean out my fingernails after the bell rings, then I'll be minimize risk somehow. Like I have to do it or something like that. It's a little gross.
Yes, that makes me think of so many things. One is I can speak from experience. I've been diagnosed with OCD, so I know what it feels like, at least my version, my experience of it. And I think for me, it comes down to feeling out of control. And that's something that we were discussing about your article. Feeling out of control and feeling so uncomfortable and anxious about not being in control, that you find ways to convince yourself that you actually are in control.
Yeah, right? For sure.
So if you know?
Yeah.
Does that speak to you, Rob?
Absolutely, yeah. For sure. My thing, I never assigned I'll be okay if I do these things, but ever since when I'm walking down the street and there are, lines in the pavement, I sort of draw an imaginary grid in my mind and don't step on the lines. But it's never if I do step on a line, someone will die, or something like that. But there are those strange, let's not judge them. Aren't strange. They're totally normal. I do that for sure.
Yeah, it's normal to want to feel in control in a world that is so out of our control. And taking COVID as an example, it's scary to think at this point, there's not a whole lot you can do to not get it. That's so scary. And so we can kind of convince myself, no, if I do this, this, and this, I won't get it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, the truth is you actually don't have as much control as you think.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Very scary idea that you don't have control. It's you know, I judge people who I feel like, well, these people are telling themselves a story because they want to make the world make sense and they want to be in control because they're scared. And I judge them. But I don't know. Maybe judging people isn't great. I don't know. Listen.
Hot take.
We all want to be morally good, right? I assume everyone wants maybe to be morally good, people. But maybe they don't. I don't know.
I do. I desperately want to be morally good. I think about it a lot.
Yeah, me too. Catholic school kid over here, y'all.
Catholic and Rob, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I went to a Jesuit school, so it wasn't as judgy. So we could talk about morality in a way that was not like, I mean, definitely I have the feeling my mother went to you are definitely going to hell like Catholic school when she was a kid. But like when I went to high school, like we could say whatever we wanted, like and the priest would be cool with it, which was
cool.
So it was more like an intellectual kind of exercise rather than judgmental thing of like, if you don't follow these particular rules, you will be bad. Even though somehow with Catholicism that just slips in anyway, like mm-hmm. I just feel like like for as early as I can remember, I just felt like Jesus knows every single thought that I have, and if a bad one is in there, I'm gonna get in trouble, or you know what I mean, or yeah. something like that.
Yeah.
That was sort of like my childhood like religion, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. that's sort of a chicken and the egg thing. Is that like how I was born, or is
right.
that, or was that indoctrinated into me from? You know, CCD and things like that. Hard to say. Probably
did you just absorb it from the environment and it just latched on because it made so much sense? Like, yes, of course.
Yes, of course. Of course, Jesus Christ is a mind reader and like just has knows everything, I think. But that's another sort of like perfection. I've outgrown it, but I did used to have a perfection of thought sort of thing where like I shouldn't think bad thoughts or think things about people they're gonna find out, you know, or have bad opinions of people behind their back or things of that nature.
Yeah,
that one also strikes me because I guess this is turning into an OCD episode. another symptom is intrusive thoughts in OCD. So sometimes you'll have an intrusive thought that's not pleasant, that doesn't really reflect your beliefs. It's, you know, it's the language is kind of tricky because people say, I think this, right? Like, I think One Direction is a good band. And like, it's like, you think, you're saying, I think as like, I believe, or like, this is my conviction.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have thoughts that are not our beliefs or our convictions. It's just a thought that comes into our heads. And so something that I've had to practice is like, this thought is not a reflection of who I am, and I'm not going to be afraid of it, and I'm going to welcome it, and then send it on its way.
Let it go.
It's not going to hurt me.
Yeah. Are you meditating? Because that's sort of a meditation practice kind of thing.
But yes.
Which
I use a lot of mindfulness meditation to help with that. Yeah.
And that's like another sort of pocket of OCD-ness or perfectionism, or sort of like drilling down to like, okay, if I'm not my thoughts, then who am I? You know what I mean? If I am not the thoughts in my head, you know, what is myself? And I don't know. And that's kind of freaky to think about. And they're like, I read a book, this guy named Sam Harris. I think that's his name. Yeah. Dan Harris does 10% Happier. Sam Harris is one of like the new atheists who does a one called Waking Up. And there are people, okay, in the brain, the corpus callosum or whatever, the thing that connects the left and right brain. Sometimes mm-hmm. there are people who have mm-hmm. severe epilepsy, and what they do is they sever that. So the left and right brains are not connected anymore. And these people have been used in experiments, ethical experiments, where they would, you know, in terms of, you know, two hemispheres of the brain can actually have different thoughts or different things. Like one of the things was like, they would have someone put their hand like behind a screen and say, choose, you know, the red or the blue marble or whatever. And like person would say verbally, I'll choose the red one. And then behind the screen, which the person can't see, the hand would pick the blue one. So it would be like two different thoughts from the same brain, two different hemispheres. And so it's basically like, yeah, these thoughts, these things, your brain works in a lot of different ways. And when it's all connected, apparently, like, you know, one thought will win. so you feel like you think this thing, but not necessarily. That's not necessarily true.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but that made me think of another experiment with someone who I think their two hemispheres were not connected. And you can whisper something in one of their ears and only one half of their brain will like hear it.
Yeah.
So they would tell someone, like, they would whisper in the person's ear, like, go into that room over there. And they would get up and they'd go over into the room. I'm probably getting this wrong.
Yeah.
They'd get up and they'd go over into the room and they'd say, why did you do that? Why did you go into the room? And they'd go, oh, I was getting this cup.
Oh yeah.
They would make it up, but they would believe it.
God. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Because they have to tell themselves the story of to make sense of why they did it. I don't know. I definitely got that wrong. Google it. I don't know how you would Google that, but
no, that sounds.
I would like to see people.
That sounds like we're doing sort of like a sober drunk history of psychological experiments. And then he just
we're not even drunk and we're getting it so horribly wrong.
Oh, thank you both for being so generous and saying we. It's just me that's getting everything wrong.
Now, believe me, I mean, mine was probably as accurate as yours. But yeah, so no, that stuff is fascinating to me. Like, yeah, like errant thoughts and who am I, you know? And
are we?
Yeah.
The brain is... The more I study the brain, the more freaked out I get. It's just, it's as vast as the universe itself.
You know, when you said there are intrusive thoughts, I'm sorry, I didn't give that the weight it deserved.
Thank you, Rob.
We are as vast.
Yeah. Yeah, let's take a minute for that one.
Yeah.
As vast
I'm sorry, Ellen.
As the props. Universe itself.
We contain worlds.
It's a big statement. It needs a pregnant pause.
Yeah.
Okay.
I stepped all over it. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, no, when you said we have these thoughts, but we are not our thoughts, and then you said, if we're not our thoughts, what are we? My stomach dropped, honestly. I was like, this is something I've never even considered, I don't think.
Yeah.
It'll give you an existential crisis.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. But it's okay. We're all trying to figure it out. We're all trying to figure it out together.
As vast as the universe itself.
We need to add sound effects to this episode.
If you think about it, it's and you think about it, and you're like, I don't have an answer, and then,
we're gonna solve one problem at a time.
Yeah,
the problem is why are we trying to be perfect? Rob, I wanted to talk a little bit about identity. Because in one of our earlier episodes with Greg Matthews, we talked about how, perfection tends to amplify when we're doing something that we feel is very close to our identity. So in your article, you mentioned that, like, if you weren't great at football or, like, if you weren't wearing the right clothes in high school, you're like, well, I don't really care about that stuff. That's not really who I am. So I don't have to be perfect in it. But I found it interesting that, like, grades were really important to you, and, like, the things that were important to you, it amplified. Although comedy for you, it was not so much. So I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, that was weird. That was like a discovery for me just writing about this stuff, that, like, when I look back at my comedy experiences. Yeah, I do identify, and it is, it's more important to me than like, you know, my job to a certain extent. I mean, I hope my coworkers don't listen, but, but like my, yeah, my identity as like, you know, a funny person or someone who loves comedy. It's a big part of, yeah, it is a big part of my identity. So yeah, I was kind of like, you know what? I don't recall as much stress or as much worry regarding comedy as I did about grades and my future or even now with like my career or something like that. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what you both think of that. I think, yeah, I did listen to that episode and Greg was saying like how much stress he had just doing, like especially a Zoom show where you can't hear laughs, right? Was that sort of one of the things like, yeah, I don't, I wonder about that. Like but there was like a fair amount of like procrastination and which is, you know, a side effect of perfectionism for sure. Not wanting to, and yeah, I think I mentioned like I fell back on like tired jokes that I know would get laughs and like I didn't like push myself to grow or anything like that. So there was that kind of fear of trying to write something new and not finding anything, which is its own kind of like perfectionist fear. But maybe it's just like because it brought me joy. You know, I mean, there must be something about that. Like, yeah,
I thought that I was trying to figure this out on your behalf. And I was like,
thank you. I'm curious what you think.
This is what we do. We act as each other's therapist.
Fantastic. Yeah.
On the show. But I was like, maybe he just liked doing it. Like maybe he was just enjoying himself, you know, like maybe when you were kicking your ass, getting straight A's, it wasn't super fun, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, it wasn't. it wasn't at all. That was more like getting good grades. I was almost like a tightrope. Like, it's sort of like, I can walk this tightrope. If I fall, you know, I'm fucked, you know? Like, that's how it feels. Certainly when you're a kid, I think. Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure on, like, high school students to, like, you know, get into college and, you know, you're going to ruin your life unless you do X, Y, and Z. Some people don't buy into it, but I totally did.
I did, too. Yeah. What a scam.
A little bit, yeah.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
like you said, like, I mean, like, you're going to be fine if you're not the top of your class. You're going to be fine if you don't go to an Ivy League school. Like, I'm not saying don't study.
Yeah, but, right.
You know, you don't have to be so intense about it.
Yeah, definitely.
But that felt higher stakes to you. And Alan, I'm glad you brought that up because I was actually going to ask about that too. That stuff, the, you know, pleasing your parents who didn't have a fuck up sibling for them to compare you to.
Yes.
That was really interesting observation. But yeah, the stakes felt high. But yet, for something that is so important to you, clearly, storytelling, stand-up, and improv, all these things that you clearly you're great at and you clearly enjoy, and the reason it stuck out to me is because like I feel the same way. Like, it's not sketch and improv and all that. It's not something that I stress out about. It doesn't feel like work to me. But the state, it should feel very high stakes. Right?
Yeah, although, it should.
I will say sketch does stress me out a lot now that I think about it. Sketch, I guess because you have to prepare, you're staring at the blank page.
Yeah.
Or you have to memorize something that you don't have memorized. It's like the future is, you're like seeing yourself fucking up on stage and it's a nightmare. I don't know. I guess it's just improv because there's no homework. It doesn't. This is not a question.
Yeah, no, that's definitely encouraging.
It's okay. You can work out your stuff too.
Yeah.
I also wonder if it's the environment because, like, grades seems really intense because, like, everyone's competing against each other. Like, you know, you, to be the top five in your class, like, you have to beat other people. And, like, even at your job, like, not that I think you're in danger of this, but like you could theoretically get fired, right? If you didn't do well. So like it, again, it feels a little bit like, a scary environment. Whereas like comedy, and maybe not so much stand-up, I don't know a lot about the stand-up world, but like the improv world seems very welcoming and kind of like, you know, you do bad and people like want to hug you.
Yeah, so, for sure.
I just wonder if it's like part of it is like the supportive environment.
You know? Definitely. Like, I think like when I sort of made the transition from like doing stand up to doing improv, like stand up for me, I never like made it particular. I never made it far. Like I did like, you know, open mics and bar shows and things like that. And I did like some festivals and things of that nature. And, but like, for the most part, you'd be in the basement of a bar for like 3 hours yeah. to do 5 minutes yeah. that no one wants to hear. And with improv, at least like if you bomb, at least you bombed with like, I don't know, five pretty interesting people that you can go and drink with yeah. afterwards, you know,
right.
who are pretty nice and are kind of into this like kind of weird art form. And I found that with storytelling too. I think I mentioned in what I wrote that like, storytellers are, they like, I have this thing about audiences, like sometimes with stand up audiences, they want you to do it to them. Like do the funny to me. yeah. You know what I mean? Whereas like,
yeah.
With storytelling, they take a step towards you. Like I want to engage with you and like, ooh. Listen to what you have to say. I'm here to get you. Like, and I'm going to take a step towards you, like mentally. Whereas, and so yes. like, and like another different thing is like, I'll do, storytelling open mics where, so the thing that's happened in New York now is like, I think stand up open mics, you get like 2 or 3 minutes so that everybody gets up. Whereas like in storytelling, you'll get your 5 to 7 or whatever, but you might not get up that night. And that's fine because at least you're going to listen to some good stuff, which is like yes. another interesting difference between those two. But yeah, so, and I think what we were talking about, like, yeah, the stress or the anxiety around things and storytelling in particular, I find like even more so than improv is not an anxiety provoking fit in terms of like yes. doing it. People will hear your imperfect stuff and kind of like return the next week to hear it again and see if you change anything and be like, oh, I like that new bit you did, you know, something like that. Hmm. So I don't know. Yeah.
So do you have repeat customers who are like listening to a song? It's like
a little bit. Yeah. It's all, but yeah. There, I mean, it's all, we're all doing it for each other. Like there aren't too many like audience members there as well. Unless, sure. I mean, you know, Moth Story Slams are full of non-storytellers who are just there to listen, which is pretty cool. And that can be pretty, you know, if you're doing something for 100 people, like even if you really enjoy it, you still want to get it right. And you can definitely freeze up there. But in the community, it's sort of a different thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what's the takeaway from this? Is it the feeling you have of like, no matter what happens, it's going to be okay. Do you carry that with you into other parts of your life? Is it the community that's saying, hey, this is what's missing? Why are the other things that we do that cause us stress? You know, why do they cause us stress and these other things don't? You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to draw a huge conclusion.
Right.
Is it an
overarching theory? I think that like, I mean, again, I think it does come down to enjoyment. Like one is okay. that you enjoy it. You enjoy doing this thing. I also feel like, so I mentioned flow in that, in when I wrote like, and I don't know if you've read that, but like, you know, flow is like that concept of an optimal state where you're not even thinking. You're sort of like, and he sort of, draws this like graph, right? Where like, and it's sort of like a 45 degree angle where like, and on the bottom axis is, like mastery of the task and, like the vertical axis, is like, difficulty of the task, right? So if you are, stuffing envelopes, like you can do that. It's easy, you know, and you can just do it. You're not going to be in flow because it's too easy. And, doing brain surgery, if you aren't a doctor is going to be like extraordinarily difficult. You're not going to get flow because it's too fucking hard. You know, it's like, so that those are two disparate points. But like when your skills are, and he says, when you're, when the difficulty of the task is like just beyond your skills, like that's when you're going to achieve flow, you know? So I talk about like, I don't know, like a goal or just wanting to be better at this thing. And you know, you don't really, I mean, again, you want to be good at improv, right? And you go out and you do your shows and a lot of time, and you fail a lot. Like I was bad for years and sort of didn't know what I was doing for years, but then something just sort of clicks. And then, I don't know, when you sort of have when you have the tools to accomplish what you want to accomplish, it's not a stressful thing, even though technically it's like a hard thing that you're doing. It's sort of a flowish kind of thing. Does that make sense? Mm. Like you're sort of like, I don't know, flow-ish. Accomplishing something. Yeah. Flowish.
Yeah. No, I love that you brought up flow. I've heard this in other contexts too, around like writers, artists, like you have to get into that flow.
Yeah.
And like once you're there, you don't want to like get interrupted because it's like a rhythm, right? And I think that's such a good thing to strive for, because when you're in flow, you're not really focused on all those negative things that come with perfectionism. Like, what are people thinking of me? And is this good enough? You're just in it. You're just present and doing your thing. It kind of like also reminds me, I don't know if this relates, but it reminds me of like being on a really good date. You know, like if you're not in flow, you might be like super self-conscious. Like, do I look okay? Am I saying stupid stuff? But like when you're clicking with a person and when you have a lot of chemistry with someone, like it's just flowing and you're not even really thinking about those self-conscious things. And so maybe the takeaway, Dennis, you were looking for a takeaway, is to strive to get into this flow. I like that.
I like that too. And speaking of flow and not getting interrupted, let's take a break.
Let's take a break. That was a sweet, sweet transition, Dennis.
Perfect.
Yeah. Break. And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're weird. Who does that? We're here with storyteller Rob Penty, whose writing you can find at actuallyitsrobpenty.org.com.
a couple, I actually don't know when this was, and it's not relevant, but we had a guest on. Her name is Amanda Rothman. She is also a magnet improviser or ex-magnet improviser and a drama therapist. And she had a really great insight on how she would define perfectionism. She said that perfectionism is avoiding shame. And so I felt that was very similar to your definition of perfectionism is minimizing risk.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, risk for what? And I was like, I think it's shame. I think it all comes back to shame. Like, you're minimizing the risk of shame. Like, if I, you know, don't wear the right clothes, if I don't look a certain way, like, people are going to ridicule me. And why is that bad? Because I will feel shame if people ridicule me. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that definition.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds about right. It's sort of, yeah, I was trying to think, like, what is it really that is perfection for perfectionism? And it's for me, avoiding shame. Minimizing the risk. For me, it's like criticism, I think. Like, I don't want to, or like, one of the things that like would really make me feel bad is, oh, you should have known that. Or why didn't you know that, you know? Let's see, what else? Or just sort of, I feel like, yeah, like disappointing people or something that like kind of I'm a little obsessed with is like, or and I think other people have had this too, is like, do those people not like me? You know, or do they think something bad about me because of something that I did? yes. things like that. And it is that shame or, I mean, it's certainly, it's in that neighborhood for sure. like
what a terrible neighborhood that is.
Exactly. but yeah, is it shame or is it, just avoid it. Yeah. Just avoiding feeling bad about yourself, which I guess is shame. So yeah, no, that's a good definition. Right. So Amanda won the definition contest. Damn it.
Amanda Rothman. Her episode hasn't aired yet, but I've decided she's a fan favorite.
Yep. Fan favorite.
It really, really struck me, that definition, when this paragraph in your article where you're talking about your writing process and you're saying, like, you know, when you tell a story, you have, like, very strict, like, you put it in a Word document and then you like to print it out and then, like, you'd like to use a red pen. And I was reading this and I was like, that doesn't sound like perfectionism. That just sounds like he has a preference for his writing process. And then at the very end, you said, and if I forget a particular detail or section or turn a phrase, I'll definitely hate myself for it. And I'm like, there it is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's when preference turns into perfectionism, right? If you did all that stuff and didn't hate yourself, it wouldn't be perfectionism.
That's interesting. Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's, or like, sometimes you'll have to drop like a detail early in a story that pays off at the end. And like, if you forget that early detail, it's like, fuck it. It's, oh, I just screwed the whole thing up. It doesn't matter. You know, like,
so true.
So yeah, it is that sort of like, there are times when like I told a story that like didn't work and you just felt, I felt just like embarrassed. And luckily, like, I like this enough and I've been doing it long enough to realize that the only cure for that is to go back and try again. Whereas like if I were younger, maybe I'd be like, oh, this isn't for me. And I'd quit, you know, out of embarrassment and just basically like kind of go off and heal and just never do it again. But like, I think like I'm lucky that I've stuck with this long enough that I've failed enough times and lived that like I realized like, oh, I'm not gonna stop doing this. I'm just gonna go back and try again. But yeah, that it stings.
Yes.
And similarly with like saying something stupid at a party, like it stings. Or like, I don't know, like calling someone by the wrong name, you know, like that. Oh my like God. Like I'll remember.
I'm being so triggered.
Honestly terrified of that. I'm terrified of that. And me too. And like 95% of the time, because I teach, 95% of the time, I know their name, but yeah. I don't say it because
avoid direct addresses often, like often, like just sort of like, or here's something. Okay. I remember this very clearly. Like there was a woman I was like emailing and her name was Rebecca. And like, I like emailed her like, hey, Becca. And it was like, I go by Rebecca. And I was like, okay, that's fine.
I'm gonna freak out about this for the next.
Don't worry about it. This I sent this email about 7 years ago. So, right? Like, I mean, it's and you know, it's never gonna go away. It's just sort of like it's tucked in there. It's not always at the front. It's not always at the front of the files. But like, if I dig, I can find it. So stuff like that. Yeah, and worries about that are like. That always happens.
But you know what? Like, I'd love to zero in on this because it's so nice. Rebecca probably didn't care as much as you think she did.
Probably not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
She was probably just like, oh, I'm going to clarify this, and probably never thought about it again.
Yeah, but, she probably didn't say it in that tone where you, the way you said it, where she's like very haughty, like, I don't care about Rebecca. Like you're a piece of dog shit that she's stepping over.
It's actually Rebecca.
And she floats off into heaven.
And here's the other caveat to that. Like I can tell myself that and it doesn't help. Like I know. Yeah. Like I know that. I know that.
Yeah.
She probably doesn't like care and it sort of like doesn't matter. she's right. Not thinking about me. She's thinking about herself and about all of her shit. You know what I mean? But it's like, right. That does not cure me.
There's this song lyric that goes, names are not important. So if someone forgets your name, they're forgetting something intangible that has nothing to do with you. So it's stupid to feel bad if somebody forgets your name.
Interesting take.
That's the song lyric.
That's a very melodic song lyric. What band is that?
Yeah, I don't remember the band. It was on the soundtrack for the movie Zero Effect, which is probably
don't what. Stress out someone, forget your name.
Sounds, it sounds more like a lecture quickly. Than a song.
It's but said
yeah,
very yeah. quickly. Yeah, no, it's from somebody out there is going to recognize this lyric from a song from okay. the soundtrack to the movie Zero Effect, which, Rob, I bet if you haven't seen
it. Oh, Bill Pullman.
Yeah. I was going to say, I bet you'd love it because I feel like we have similar tastes in movies.
Yeah.
Dennis, you have to stop trying to turn this podcast into a movie podcast.
Foiled again.
He did this last episode too.
We went off on a 7-minute tangent about The Matrix, and that wasn't... That wasn't just me. There were two other people involved in that.
Okay, fair. Just to talk about Becca some more.
Rebecca.
On the reverse side, I'm also the kind of person that if someone mistakenly called me Becca, I'm like, I guess I'm Becca now. Because I'll never correct them, because if I correct them, that's mean and they'll feel bad and I don't want to make anyone feel bad.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So it's like, good for Rebecca for like just having the self-respect to be like, that's not my name. Here's my name.
Yeah. No, yeah. And yeah. Like I mentioned Little League in my thing, and my coach called me Robert for the entire time. I was like, I never told him Rob. Just sort of like I was Robert for an entire season.
And did you do what made you hold back on telling him?
Yeah, just sort of like, no, it's at that. Well, that was on the list because it's probably my legal name. So I was like, yeah,
right.
He was right to call me Robert. I'm wrong to want to be called Rob.
No, you're technically right. I'm wrong.
Technically, yeah. Technically, my name is Robert. So you got me there, Coach.
You know, that happened to me. I started high school and I was like, you know, I'm going to honor my mother by hyphenating my last name, which is something that a lot of Latino countries people do. And I did it for about a day. And then like the gym coach called me by only the second part, the second hyphenated last name, which is my mom's. And I was like, this isn't working. And I stopped immediately. I guess that's a different type of thing. But I just gave up immediately. I don't know, that I feel like that has something to do with perfectionism also. I wanted to ask, because I never asked this, and I've been thinking about it. When I describe what the show is, I say perfectionism, how it holds us back, and also how it may be good, but we never really talk about how it might be good. We never really get there. And I wanted to ask, Rob, what do you think? Is there, because I do think wanting things to be perfect sometimes like helps, because then, you know, you become a great cook or musician or storyteller or whatever, or what have you. So what do you think about that, Rob?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think that like I won't, so as much as like I won't like pass the buck, I think that's sort of like one thing. Like if like I know that like if there's like somebody at work who like needs help or like there's a project that needs to get done at some point, I don't think I've ever said like, oh, I won't work late. Like I'll stay and do it just to make sure that it gets done, because it's like, it's going to fall to somebody. So I don't know if that's perfectionism or really like what you're talking about, but,
it's and, like moral I also responsibility. Like, it's like, that's part of like being a good person maybe.
Yeah.
A team member.
Yeah, I was like talking about like, oh, this, another thing that came up in therapy. This is what it reminds me of, that like some, like my therapist said, like sometimes a bug can be a feature in terms of what you think about yourself. And my perfectionism, like, I suppose it did. I mean, I didn't learn much in college, so all the crazy studying I did in high school, that's I'm cruising on that. That's all the vocabulary and Latin roots I have is all from junior year English. And yeah, is my perfectionism? Well, I mean, honestly, yeah, that's a question I need to think about, because most of the time I only associate it with anxiety that I'm messing up something, or I might be messing up something that I don't even know I'm messing up right now. You know, I might be not paying attention to something. So, I mean, I guess a plus is I'll never burn my house down because I always check like my stove before I leave. Like that's a plus. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I think that, yeah, you're right. I think a lot of things that I might say like, oh, these are things that I kind of like about myself maybe aren't related to perfectionism as much as like a sense of responsibility to somebody or a sense of, if no one else does this, it won't get done. And I don't want to let the team down, you know, whether it's an improv team or my coworkers or something like that.
And afterwards, do you feel like I did a good thing?
More like I'm glad I did that. Not like I did a good thing or not like I helped people, but it's sort of like, it's like, it's a lot of times, like sometimes like tasks like that sort of like, are like, oh my God, I really don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. And then you do it and it's like, that wasn't that bad. That was okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I took it like a lot of times, like, I don't know, late night work or just sort of like scheduling something for other people or something like that. So yeah, not like, oh, that felt good, but like, it wasn't too bad. That like thing that I kind of built it up in my head. It just had to get done and now it's done and now it's over.
So. Yeah. You build things up in your head, right? That's part of perfectionism.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, projecting awful consequences into the future of like what will happen or again, like when, so like with writing, like when you're staring at the blank page, like, and you just sort of, if you don't write anything, a lot of times like sentences will come into your head to start and you're like, that's stupid. And you don't write it. And it's like, and then another one will come. And it's like, that's stupid too. And you don't write it. And like, that's stupid. And like, you don't write it. Whereas like write the stupid sentence and then write the next stupid sentence and then write until you find a sentence that you can tolerate and then delete the first five sentences that suck. And you know, I'll say that now, but if I sit down to do it, I'll still be like, this sucks. I have nothing to say. This sucks. I have nothing to say. This sucks. So yeah, it's kind of easy to say when you're discussing the concept with you two, but then like when you actually just sit down and face it, like the task never gets easier and you kind of have to start all over again every time.
Yeah. So I guess the answer is perfectionism is mostly bad.
Yeah. That's where that's the takeaway. There's your takeaway.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think, and I just want to say one quick thing, Ellen. I'm sorry.
Yes, please don't please.
That, yeah, that's, I'd say it's mostly bad for me. Like for me, the two things that are really, that the perfectionism, well, there's a few things, but the perfectionism really keeps me from doing is like playing music and drawing.
Yeah.
Because, especially drawing, because the drawing, I feel like so seen when somebody looks at my drawing, they're looking at like my most like essential self and they're judging it and they're saying, this was a dumb idea to draw this. This execution is bad. You shouldn't be doing this. These other eight people are way better than you. Just let them do it. And it's so mean. Yeah. And
wow.
It's
so, yeah, like, that's rough, man.
Yeah. Music, not so much because I feel like the stakes have lowered on that. Whereas, like, I had a guitar on my shelf gathering on the hook on the hook gathering dust for literal years before I touched it, and then I was like, well, that wasn't so bad. I'm having fun. Yeah. Nobody cares.
My dusty guitar is over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Dennis did the art for our podcast, and it's beautiful.
It's great.
I just wanted to say that.
And it was excruciating. But thank you, Ellen.
But yeah, I
mean it.
Like, I was surprised to note about myself, to bring it back to me, guys.
Of course, of course. Yeah, please.
I'm
sorry.
That, like, I sort of... that was a joke. Don't feel like, I don't know what it is. Like, certainly like with writing and storytelling, even improv, like I don't feel that like, oh, somebody else should be doing this or, you know, people are judging this. I do. Well, you know, I think that people are judging it obviously. But there's something I'm okay putting it out there and I'm okay telling a story, and I'm kind of okay getting on stage to try to do scenes. You know, there's something about it that, yeah, that doesn't provoke that shame with me. sorry if this sounds well adjusted. I know it's not good for the podcast.
Rod, you're too well adjusted to be a guest. Get off.
Yeah. That was an awful episode. He just pleased with himself, and I don't know.
Rob,
just...
don't worry, you don't come off well adjusted. But you know where to find your joy.
Yeah, and I guess
that is worth a lot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just want to try to help answer your question, Dennis, about like the good parts of perfectionism. And I think if we define perfectionism as inherently tied to shame, I don't think there's any good. But what's the word for like maybe the good parts without the shame parts? It wouldn't be perfectionism.
I guess it wouldn't be perfectionism. It'd just be like, well, I have high standards. I don't know.
Yeah. It'd be like striving without judgment.
But it's it's the fear of the shame that drives it. Like it's to
oh
a certain,
my god!
Like, do you know what I mean? Like to a certain extent, like
yeah, you're right. You're
there's
right.
Like that thing of like whenever they talk about like I think a lot of times when they talk about like whatever like dead musicians who died of like a drug overdose, and there are people who are like think of what they could have accomplished if they were sober, and it's like well maybe like their demons drove them to all of it, you know, like maybe like the compulsion to create and that need to escape are tied together. So like maybe it's sort of like you know what I mean, like what would it be like to be a perfectionist in a positive way? Like maybe it's not ever positive, and maybe that's okay. You know, like maybe, you know, that maybe it's to, you know, embrace the fact that, oh, so my meditation this morning, it was like, they said like make friends with your anxiety, which is a very meditation app thing to say.
Yeah.
But to a certain extent, you have to say to yourself, like my body, my brain, my lizard brain thinks it's trying to protect me from something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
yes.
Just be okay with that. Like, even though it's going way too far,
yeah.
Like, be okay with it. Just like, that's a sort of a mental trick that you can have to live with it, I think. Because like, I have anxiety all the time. So like, but to say to myself like, oh, the reason I'm feeling this is because I want to protect myself on some level. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Anxiety sucks, but like, yeah.
Anxiety. And I appreciate yeah. it, my friend.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm leaving my apartment and my anxiety's like, hey, why don't you check the stove to make sure you don't burn down the place? And then you go, okay, that's helpful. And then it goes, why don't you check it again?
Yeah.
And
you're like,
wait a second, anxiety. And it's like, check it again.
Anxiety said it.
And now again.
It's like, anxiety, I didn't cook anything this morning. Check it again.
Take a picture of it.
Why are you holding that omelet? Huh? you're being right. Haunted in this also scenario. Anxiety is also a ghost.
But you're right. It is a good thing to check the stove. As long as you're doing it like once and it's not messing up the rest of your day.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Yeah.
It's when when it interferes with your life, I guess that's when, when you can't, you know, ever feel joy in anything. Like if you can't go out for a coffee because you're like literally just like staring at the stove.
Right.
What if somebody else turns it on? While
right. Exactly. Oh, the what if game.
Yeah, exactly.
So fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that
Dennis, I feel like we kind of answered that question.
Yeah, I think I'm looking for a takeaway this episode.
Love it.
I think therapy, do it. Meditation, do it.
Do it.
Use an app, I guess.
Yeah, Rob, you're doing all the right things. Again, way too well adjusted.
And yet, here I am.
And yet, but you know what? That just shows that even
you can really only like maintain the stuff, you know, just sort of like, or keep it at bay. It doesn't ever go away. It's sort of
you
like
you manage it. You don't kill
it. Yeah, you manage it. Exactly. It's like
and you try to turn bugs into features.
Yes.
Yeah, bugs into features.
Well, I think that's a good place for us to call it.
Yeah.
Shut it down.
Yeah. Shut it down.
I could not think of a positive way to say, like, I'll stop talking now.
I think this is a good time for everyone to shut the hell up.
But Rob, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
On our little show.
This was beautiful. Rob, I'm looking forward to reading more of your blog posts. How often do you post?
Not as often as I should, but there's the should. I try and do it. I'm going to try and do it more often this year. But like lately it's like every other month. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'll try and awesome. I want to write more.
Yeah. I saw you, if you go on your blog, you can order a book of your, writing. Yes. No.
Oh yeah. So the, if you go on and join my, email list, you'll get an ebook that you can download. And it's some of my favorite writing of mine. Cool. And, laid out by, Nick Jaramillo.
That guy's great.
The he's awesome. Yeah. It was a really cool thing that he did for me. And
love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it's robpenty.org.com is where you can find that. Rob, you can see Rob performing every once in a while in the Little Big Show at the Magna Theater with old Dennis Pacheco, also there.
Exactly.
Usually once a month, not January because of COVID, but usually about once a month. Anything else you want to tell the people about, Rob? Anything you're excited about?
Not really. I want to get back into improv, and I love doing those shows. I'm still a part of Sexy Baby, who's sort of, you know, on hiatus indefinitely. We'll see if we ever do a show again. I'd like that.
Oh yeah, great team.
Another team from the Magnet. And yeah, maybe just head over to my blog and check out some of my pieces if you feel the need.
Yeah.
Awesome. I certainly will be.
Yeah, I'm going to get that ebook. And you can find Rob on Twitter at Rob Penty. On Instagram, R Penty. The aforementioned, actually, is robpenty.org.com. But yeah, that's it for this week. Follow us on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Find us there. We post fun videos. All the things. Anything else, Alan? I'm not reading the...
Just, listeners, try to get into some flow this week, okay? And be gentle with yourselves. And,